Welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we critically dissect some topical developments with a leadership and management theme. I'm business and finance journalist Matt Packer, and in this episode I'll be exploring stories up to Friday the 3rd of August. And isn't it extraordinary how quickly this year is moving? Joining me in this endeavour is the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Matt.
Okay, in our first story, car maker Volkswagen is still suffering from the after effects of its emissions cheating scandal, which came to a head way back in September 2015. While the firm has achieved a better than expected 23% rise in its underlying operating profit, it is struggling with a skills shortage in its clean engine development wing because so many specialists left the firm in the wake of its ethical collapse. Indeed, as a direct result of the Volkswagen scandal, authorities in the EU, Japan and India have brought in a much stricter regime for screening engine emissions called the Worldwide Harmonized Light Vehicles Test Procedure, or WLTP. The catch? Volkswagen is now unsure whether it has enough skilled engineers to guarantee that its newer models will comply with the new standards. Doesn't this all sound horribly ironic?
Well, what it is evidence that all the research we see and the commentary that we see from thought leaders about how important sharing the purpose of the organisation with your own values is really come home to roost here with VW. These people don't want to be associated with something that everybody understood to be, and indeed was, unethical practices, and they want to be proud of their employer. And when you've got really skilled people like this, and you've got new legislation and new regulation coming in, it really is a seller's market for them, and yeah, they can go somewhere else.
Volkswagen have very much kind of dug themselves into a hole here, haven't they?
Well, what they're reaping are the consequences of unethical and poor practice, and that you can't get away with it indefinitely. Not only did they have the huge bills of correcting the errors and the recalls and everything, they've now got a skills shortage and having to engage in a recruitment drive.
What do you think they can do to turn the tide?
They've got to live it out. I think they have to keep acknowledging and apologising and keep evidencing that they're different, they're changed, and that that is real active engagement with their CSR, getting ambassadors, getting people to really speak up for them. It's a massive brand rehabilitation job.
Yeah, yes, indeed. All right, well, we're going now from workers who've been going elsewhere to workers who can't. In our second story, research from the TUC has shown that 1 in 12 UK workers are not receiving their full holiday allocations and are therefore missing out on a total of £3 billion worth of paid leave every year. Factors that the TUC has picked out behind the problem are 1. Workers are being set on realistic workloads that are constraining their ability to take leave. 2. Employers are quote-unquote managing out people's leave. And 3. Employers are failing to keep up with the law. What's your reaction to this?
Ignorance, as we know, is no excuse. And realising that your holiday entitlement is actually part of your contract of employment is something that all managers should be reminded about. It's not doing somebody a favour.
Yeah.
You do hear about people who will leave a job because if you don't get these hygiene factors, as Frederick Hertzberg would have called them, in place and correct, they cause a huge amount of dissatisfaction. Now, if we discount those people who are perhaps cynically trying to fiddle the holiday entitlements in order to reap the benefits of that, and that is just unforgivable, isn't it? You can't justify that. But if people are actually planning work schedules that don't really allow for people not to be there, then that's poor management.
Mm.
And holidays, unlike all the unforeseen things like illness and accidents, at least people know that they're coming up and they're going to have to take them. Now, we often hear about the pinch points where everybody wants to take summer holiday in August. But what we can do about that is plan for it and find a fair and transparent way of ensuring that everybody gets a good chance of getting the leave that they want and not being a first come, first serve basis, because often that is very unfair. Get your request in first and it's sort of job done. I've got the leave I want. So it's about having these open conversations, isn't it? You're all entitled to your leave. Actually, we want you to take it because it makes you a bit more productive when you come back. But it's a real call for what are you doing expecting people? It's going back to almost sort of Victorian days.
On the treadmill.
Long working weeks.
Well, I mean, I can speak from personal experience that when you get to a stage in the year where you haven't been able to take any holiday till sort of late October or early November, you're snookered energies wise, and it's all you can do to get through to the end of the year.
Yeah, I think there are rhythms to years, and I think often that when you get to the end of the reporting period, people are tired and need something to invigorate them and refresh them, ready for the challenge of the next year, and it's so counterproductive.
It certainly is. Okay, next up, big hitting entrepreneur Reid Hoffman, one of the brains behind LinkedIn, has provided his thoughts on the type of person that boards should consider ideal CEO material. Hoffman set out his ideas in an interview for fellow entrepreneur Elad Gil's new book, High Growth Handbook, noting that what boards should really be seeking is someone with a co-founder mindset. Hoffman says, quote, "You're looking for a co-founder who may have a different skill set than the people who are part of the initial family or tribe. The ability to change the curve means taking a risk that a founder would take. That requires moral authority," close quote. To what extent do you agree?
I think he's almost asking for something that by definition doesn't exist. We know what a founder is. It's somebody who's got the energy, passion, enthusiasm that goes the extra mile, doesn't take the holidays we've just been talking about because the business is so closely associated with their identity and their sense of who they are. To try and get somebody who hasn't been part of that history to come with the same drive, enthusiasm, and energy. Are you really going to get that? Because why aren't they founding their own firm? What he's probably doing importantly is identifying the different skills and capabilities that any organization needs at different stages in its history. If you want stability, you need a different sort of CEO than if you want somebody who's ambitious for growth. And I think that's an important thing to think about. And also, as we've talked before, maybe that separation of the identity of the founder with the business itself. Be thinking about that. We want a new person and a new way of running the business.
Does Hoffman's notion strike you as a bit too close to heroic leadership?
Well, it's again thinking that you're going to find this one person that is somehow miraculously going to save the organization to ensure its longevity when we know that the life cycle of organizations is shortening. And maybe it's just a case you can't continue on that growth. Maybe you settle into a period of maintenance and maybe even decline. One person isn't going to change the fortunes of a family business if you've got family members who have a way of doing things.
All right then, and finally, in a particularly charming story this week, Business Insider profiled US tech entrepreneur John Zanni, who is currently president of global cloud data firm Acronis. Now, while Zanni has worked in tech since 1994, beginning with a 16-year stint at Microsoft, he attributes much of his success to the 13 years he spent before that working at and eventually running his family's French restaurant. In Zanni's view, that formative period imbued him with a host of people skills that have proven invaluable in his tech work. Indeed, he points out, 25% of the dishes he sold were off menu, so he routinely had to adapt to diners' tastes. What should leaders take away from this?
I was in a restaurant earlier this week where the owner was relentlessly walking round tables, talking to people, making everybody feel good. I was watching him and thinking, that is really, really hard work. But goodness me, isn't it transferable? You know, how to make people feel welcome, listened to. I can't see how that doesn't work in any people-facing business, whether it's customer-facing or working with staff. And especially in IT, where you hear quite a lot about they're less likely to have those sorts of people skills, then he really must stand out.
Absolutely. Do you think that this suggests that people should spend a certain amount of time honing their people skills in a particular industry that they're not necessarily going to go into, just to arm themselves with what they'll need later on?
I think focusing and concentrating on what such the wrong word we call soft skills when they are so hard to develop should be essential for anybody who sees themselves as a leader or manager because ultimately they're relational jobs. Essentially, if you're in an organization working with others, it's those relationship skills that you need. And where better than to develop those when people are out relaxing and they've come to you for you to make them feel good?
And they're complete strangers. I mean, I think soft skills now is considered as sort of a derisory term.
Well, it's just the wrong term, isn't it? We talk about it so often that the hard skills, the strategy and the finance absolutely need them, but they're not the whole package.
Mm. Yeah, people skills are really the glue that holds everything else together, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, well, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website, which can be found at www.institutelm.com. That's www.institutelm.com. Thank you very much indeed for your insights, Kate. I look forward to exploring a new set of stories with you next week.
Thanks, Matt.